Well, welcome everyone to the first ever Laser Cube podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Tyler Crawley, and with me in the co-pilot seat is Dean Brennan from IPG. And Dean, thanks for being here.
Well, Tyler, I appreciate you doing this with us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Dean, as you know, what we're going to be doing here with this Laser Cube podcast, at least for the first couple of episodes, is we're going to be talking to people who actually purchased a Laser Cube and how it's impacted their business. And in fact, Dean and I have spent the last couple of weeks talking to people who have purchased the machine and how they've implemented it in their business and what sort of impact that has had. And this week we're going to be focusing on the accuracy of the Laser Cube. And Dean, before we get into the first couple audio clips, I know you had something you wanted to say.
Yeah. So I think what's unique about the accuracy of the machine is that we're offering a machine that we have a combination of high power, high accuracy, and it's married to this machine vision. And so the ability to locate features on the workpiece and align the cutting program to those features are really the differentiating feature of the Laser Cube.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I think this is a good time to move into clip number one. We have actually two clips from Dale from Texas Nameplate. We're going to play clip one here, and of course, as I said, this is all about the accuracy of the Laser Cube and how it's benefiting him and his business.
Throughout the years in our industry, and specifically for Texas Nameplate, the last 70 years, we've been very dependent on mechanical punch presses to actually blank out the finished part from the sheet of metal. Mechanical punch presses have been around a long time. They've done the job very adequately, and then lasers came around. We all know lasers have been around for some time, but they were primarily used for just blanking part. The problem that we had at Texas Nameplate in our industry was the lasers, with its first inception, had a very difficult time of registering the printed side of the part, meaning that the concentricity of the nomenclature to the edge of the part was not consistent to our customers' needs. So when the lasers first came out, they were not punched adequately for our customers' needs. Now, over time, and we at Texas Nameplate, we suspected eventually that the laser companies would be able to enhance the software program or whatever it was to create a vision system or whatever was needed for it to be more accurate for the nomenclature to the edge of the part. Many of us in our industry bought other type of lasers hoping that it would work, and make no mistake, some of them did. But in Texas Nameplate's mind, like we'd say in Texas, it just wasn't good enough. And that's where we got pretty excited when IPG, they were the first to perfect it in the way that we thought it was going to be something that we could count on, not only for today and tomorrow, but ultimately our total future. Our future goal is to totally eliminate all of our mechanical punch presses and go exclusively with lasers.
Now, from what I took away from that as someone that knows almost nothing about this entire process, is that before lasers came about, it seemed like mechanical punching was really the only way to go, and that lasers may be sort of the future. And I guess, is that sort of the divide that exists right now?
Right, because when you're punching, and most listeners on the podcast are going to know, so you're getting your education.
Yes.
But it's the ability of getting rid of tooling. You don't have to do setups with tooling. Mm-hmm. You don't have to purchase the tooling or maintain it. You know, the advantages of the laser are great. But as lasers get more efficient, then they're able to replace more and more operations. So one of the operations in the case of Texas Nameplate was the inspection process. And I think Dale talks about how he's leveraged the machine accuracy and the accuracy of the vision.
I believe he does. And so without further ado, let's get to audio clip number two of Dale from Texas Nameplate.
The other key items was a defect rate. You can only well imagine doing anything that you used to do 70 years ago is not going to be too consistent with quality, defect rate, et cetera, et cetera. The lasers, when we first got our first IPG, we were putting on a high-dollar measurement machine, and it was getting within 5 thousandths. And we were going to get a SOP, or a standard operating procedure, that every fifth job that came off the IPG had to go through the measurement system. we found out a consistent pattern that every nameplate was coming off with intolerance. So we discontinued any standardization that we had to go in and confirm that. Now, in addition to the defect rate, we've obviously been able to reduce our overruns. In the mechanical punch press way of doing it, we had to overrun maybe 5% because you had the defect rate. We're probably as low as 1%, sometimes 0.5% on the lasers. Obviously, when you start doing all that, you talk about reduction of cycle time, because anything that we had to go to the mechanical punch press, large sheets of metal had to be cut down to individual strips, the width of the fabricated part, so it could be fed through the die. Obviously, with the lasers, we're unable to put a much larger sheet of metal on the bed, which saves a lot of labor and cycle time as well.
Now, we are going to get into another episode, some other aspects of obviously the laser cube with, you know, the speed and, of course, the size. But it is interesting to hear him talk about the defect rate with such small percentages from 5 to 1%. But I have to imagine that's a huge benefit of using a laser.
Yeah. But just because you have a laser doesn't mean that you don't still use a punching process.
Yeah.
So a lot of times you have, with a punch, you may be forming on the metals on that machine. And then you would use the laser in combination with that. So to get a perspective from a metal cutting job shop or fabricator, was Steven at High Tech Fabrication.
Yes, exactly. So that's actually going to bring us to clip number 3, as Dean just mentioned, of Steven from High Tech Fabricators.
Yeah, we do a whole lot of it. We got the camera on ours. So we used to have to punch stuff and then fixture it on the old laser and cut one, see where it was at, and then move it a couple thousands or however far we needed. And now we just throw a sheet on, and usually within the first part or two, it's dead on with the vision system. It's been working awesome. We've got some pretty complex stuff that would warp on the old laser because of the heat, especially on the aluminum, on the T6 stuff that we were cutting. We would have issues trying to keep the laser edge to the punched holes, and now with the single point positioning with the vision system, we can get the parts pretty much perfect within a thousand or two.
Now, you brought up the vision system a lot when we were talking to a lot of the people and the importance of the vision system. So talk about that just a little bit.
Well, it's just not IPG already had the technology to make a very, very accurate system. And honestly, with a smaller format machine, we knew where there were some markets that we could leverage that. But what's happened now is that companies like High Tech Fabrication, they're the big boys. They buy big lasers, but there's advantages to the laser cube and they choose us. Now, where we fit in with shops who are using several types of lasers and large format lasers, you know, there's real advantage. And I think Glenn at Sarah Laser talked about that.
Yes, he did. And without further ado, let's get to clip number 4. This is Glenn, as Dean just said, from Sierra Laser.
The other thing we really like about the machine is the accuracy of the machine. And the machine's dead accurate. It uses linear motor drives. There's no wear in the drives. And the machine is as accurate today as when we turned it on 3.5-4 years ago. So, and small parts tend to have the most demand for accuracy. So the idea of a high accuracy, small footprint machine, small format machine, actually, it made a lot of sense to us. And it's made a lot of sense in reality for us.
Glenn, sort of kind of echoing a lot of what Paul was just talking about with regards to how accurate it is. And I guess the fact that it's remained accurate has been something that he's sounded pretty happy about.
That's right. That really starts on how the machine's built. You almost have to go to the factory outside of Boston to believe it. I think it's funny that we actually got Paul Scappa, who he's responsible for this.
He's the Da Vinci.
He's the Da Vinci. So what do you think about Paul talking?
Well, I think that this is probably the most important clip that we're going to play this entire episode. That's why we saved it for last. And it's because it's Paul explaining why what we've been talking about this entire episode, the accuracy of the laser cube, how that is possible. And so anyone that understands all of this is truly going to enjoy this next clip as Paul explains why the laser cube is so accurate.
We fundamentally build the motion control platform, the XYZ stage, as individual modules so that in the end, we want to guarantee the motion accuracy of the system. So every machine is shot with a laser interferometer to understand how accurate the machine is when it's done. But we don't want to just cross our fingers and bolt the critical components in place and then in the end shoot it with the laser interferometer and find out, oh, it doesn't meet the requirements and I have to rebuild it. So if we do our job up front and build the modules, each module to a specification, it guarantees the end result. And I can say when we build the systems, we never break them apart because we build in the precision up front and we understand how to build precision motion into the platform for the machine. So to do this, the axes themselves are kind of broken down in individual modules. And so if we talk about the x-axis, our job of the x-axis is to create an axis of motion only in x when there are 6 degrees of freedom, which are 3 translations, x, y, z, and then rotations about x, y, z. So when I'm building an x-axis, I want to constrain all of those 5 degrees of motion and have only x translate through. This would be the perfect axis of motion. But what happens in reality is far in between from just creating a motion axis in x. So what we have to do is measure out all those other degrees of freedom to see how well the axis is performing. One of the key pieces of equipment we use is called an autocollimator. This measures angles at the arc second level, these degrees of freedom that have to do with rotation, so that I can see how that linear rail that I'm trying to create motion in X, how is it actually moving in space? So for this measurement with the autocollimator, like I said, it's arc seconds. There are 36 arc seconds in 1 degree of rotation. So I can see very, very finely how that rail is moving in space. And we have a requirement that over so many inches of travel, say 12 inches of travel, we can't see any more than, say, 5 arc seconds of rotation, or it doesn't meet our requirement. So overall, we straighten the rail to meet these arc second, these very minute angular motions of the rail. We take those all out till we get the readings we want, which is over 48 inches. I believe we want better than 15 arc seconds of rotation. If we do this, then when we shoot the axes with the laser interferometer, we're guaranteed to have the accuracy where it should be, which is basically better than 25 microns over, or 1 thou over 48 inches of travel. And I guess even further, the controller we use, even if that wasn't good enough, we do have the ability to map out these nonlinear errors into the controller, so that I could basically make the machine as accurate as I want for a given temperature. But for most customers, better than 1 thou is more than adequate for this market space.
So is there anything to add to that? That's pretty well involved.
I can't believe he said 36 arc seconds when there's actually 3,600. So I think you had him flustered on the call.
Yeah, that tends to happen. People sometimes are very flustered when talking to me.
This is where we just gave it up that Paul's not actually on the line right now, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, unfortunately, we have now ruined the mystique of podcasting, as everyone now is going to know that it is not live always when we are recording this podcast. But I do want to thank everyone that was involved in this first episode of the Laser Cube podcast, especially all the business owners taking time out of their busy day to talk about how they and their businesses are better off since introducing the Laser Cube to their day-to-day operations. And on this first episode, we focused on the accuracy of the Laser Cube, but in subsequent episodes, we are going to be talking about other features of the Laser Cube. But episode 1 done, officially in the can. I also want to thank Dean Brennan for joining us here on the program, my co-host on this adventure. And so, Dean, I will see you next episode.
Thank you very much, Tyler.